Side 4, Marl Fox, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 153. Creggett rose from her armchair.
Wait!
Crossing to the door, she pressed her muzzle gently against the scratches, sniffing as she moved over the markings.
G-T-G-T. I've a feeling those marks were made hastily by the last one to leave this room, carrying Martin's sword. He or she scratched them.
G-T-G-T.
Janglor nodded as the solution dawned on him.
Aye, that'd be young Dan trying to prove himself after Russell shouted at him last night, and the other two have gone with him. We'd better get searchers out, Skip. Find him, and get him back inside this abbey before anything bad happens to Song and her pals. I just figured it out. Those four letters mean gone to get tapestry.
Skipper stared at the letters.
Of course, that's what they've done. Taken Martin the warrior's sword and gone to get our tapestry back.
Only beasts with not many seasons under their belts would try a thing like that. Young, brave, and foolhardy. Wish my otters was here. We'd get him back afore you could blink. Trouble is that I think my tribe's left the falls and gone north on the stream down to the seaside. Lots of good victuals there during summer.
Janglor untied the sling from his waist. Can't stand here jawing all day. They might be in danger. Come on.
Bong, boom, bong, boom, bong. Skipper dashed past Janglor down the stairs.
Go beasts at the gate.
15. By mid-noon, Moken seemed well on the road to recovery. He had sat up after a long nap and eaten food. The water rats did not stray far from the camp, but sat awaiting his orders. Moken made a great pretense of trying to stand, but sank back down again, grimacing. He beckoned to the rat Bilu.
You're a good, strong beast. Help me up and walk along the stream bank with me, while I get these paws working properly again.
Bilu helped the Marl Fox to stand upright, and Moken leaned heavily on him, smiling his satisfaction.
Ah, that's better. Let's try a short stroll downstream, shall we?
Silently, the water rat obeyed, trying hard not to stumble as he guided his charge along the bank, close to the water. It was not long before they were out of sight of the others. From behind the trunk of a crack willow, Fenno the Shrew watched them. Weary, hungry, and red-eyed from lack of sleep, he had blundered round Mossflower until he was hopelessly lost. The shrew groveled down in the earth at the base of the willow and tried to meld himself with the tree, not knowing what to make of the incident that followed. He saw the paw that Moken had about Bilu suddenly lock around the rat's neck and tighten. Moken spoke gently, soothingly, as he slowly throttled the life from his victim.
"Will you tell my sister Vanna now, rat? This is the last lesson you'll ever learn. Never try to outsmart a Marl Fox."
Bilu's paws kicked wildly. Then his struggles lessened until he finally went limp. Moken hurled him into the stream and stood watching the rat's carcass being swept away. He chuckled.
"Never learned how to swim, eh? Typical water rat. They're not much use at learning anything."
Fenno drew in his breath sharply with fear. The Marl Fox melted back into the trees and was gone. The shrew scrambled out of his hiding place and threw himself flat on the bank. Thrusting his head into the stream, he drank, sucking in water greedily. Then, to his horror, a strong paw pressed itself down hard on the back of his neck. Fenno tried to lift his head clear of the water, but he could not. His limbs thrashed about helplessly as water rushed into his ears and eyes and up his nostrils. Just before he blacked out, he was dragged clear of the stream and smashed up against the trunk of the willow. Fenno found himself staring into the pale, ruthless eyes of Moken.
"Where are the rest of your tribe?"
Fenno shook his head as he coughed up water and stream-bed sand.
"Garg! I don't know. Quack! Believe me, I don't know."
Moken's double-bladed axe pressed none too lightly between the gagging shrew's eyes.
"Oh, I believe you. Only a complete fool would dare lie to Moken. Now listen carefully to my next question. Your life depends on the answer. Are you good at steering and guiding a logboat?"
Not daring to nod with the axe so close, Fenno managed to gasp out,
"Aye, Chief, I'm good at it."
Moken's paw was like a clawed vise. It dug savagely into the back of Fenno's neck as he was propelled forward.
"Good. I have work for you."
The 12 remaining water rats rose to attention as Moken strode into camp. apparently fully recovered, and thrusting a terrified shrew before him. He nodded to a rat. "Keep your spear on this shrew. If he moves, gut him. The rest of you, take your weapons to those logboats, but save the stoutest one. Here, shrew, which is the best of these craft?" Thinno scrabbled across and laid his paw on a boat without hesitation. "Listen, chief. 'Twas Loggerlog's boat. Belonged to a Gwasim leader." The Marl Fox inspected the fine craft, nodding his approval. "I'll keep this one. You rats, chop the rest to splinters." Swords, spears, and daggers hacked and slashed at the other five vessels. Vokan took a braided thong and loosed it about the neck of Fenno, locking off the knot so it could not be removed quickly. He dragged the bewildered and trembling shrew down to the boat he had chosen, bidding him sit in the stern. The Marl Fox prized a towing staple from one of the wrecked logboats, knotted the thong end to the staple, and drove it into the thick beechwood stern until the curve was embedded level with the wood. Fenno sat with his neck pulled to one side by the short thong. Moken smiled. "If the boat sinks, then so do you. Right, rats. Gather up all the supplies and stow that tapestry carefully amidships. High Queen Silth will be happy to see us when we bring Redwall's treasure to her." Dan went first along the trail, leading his friends in the direction of the noise. "Sounds like an army of woodpeckers having a mid-season feast," Dippler panted as he ran. Song wielded her greenstone-tipped stick. "Hardly likely, Dip. Slow down, Dan. We don't want to rush into the middle of something we can't back out of." Dan slowed until they were traveling abreast. "It stopped. Listen, is that a stream I can hear?" They skirted the wide pool formed by the end of the inlet. Stooping low and taking advantage of the bush cover, the three friends pressed forward along the deserted stream bank. Dippler saw the wreckage of his tribe's logboats first. With a sob of dismay, he threw himself down by the shattered prow of the first one.
"Waterfly! 'Tis me old boat! I paddled that in many a long day. What filthy villain 'd wreck a good craft like her?"
Song had run ahead to where the main broad stream flowed. She called back to Dippler and Dan.
"Hurry, come and see this."
They both dashed up in time to see the surviving logboat speeding out of sight around a distant bend on the fast-flowing current.
"A Marl Fox and some other beasts, with one bent over in the stern. I'll wager the tapestry's aboard that boat."
Dippler scrambled up a pine tree as far as he could climb. Clinging on with one paw, shading his eyes with the other, he watched until the vessel was lost to sight. Climbing back down, the Gwasim Shrew stamped his paws angrily.
"We just missed the scum. Guess who the other beast was? I know that stinking bully anywhere. It was Fenno." "The one that murdered Loggerlog?"
Dippler slashed the air with his rapier.
"Aye, the very one."
Dan undid his sword and pack and flung them down moodily.
"Not much we can do about it now, mates. They've wrecked the other boats and left us stranded here. Besides, who knows where they're bound? They could be sailing anywhere."
Song drew Friar Buddy's parchment from her tunic.
"That's where you're wrong, Dan. I'll wager an acorn to an oak they're away to the island in the Lost Lake. We can, too. I've got the route right here. Listen. At the rear of Redstone Wall, find me ore where breaks the day. You cannot, shall not walk at all. Just follow as I run away."
Dippler shrugged and sat beside Dan on the bank.
"You've lost me again, Song. You'll have to explain."
Song translated the lines she had read. "The rear of the Redstone Wall is the back of the abbey, where we left from. Now, we traveled east through Mossflower, and day breaks in the east, so we found it, the river. Obviously, we cannot walk on water, and the last line tells us to follow whichever way the water runs. That's the way Fenno and the Marl Fox have gone, don't you see?"
Dan jabbed his sword point into the shallows. "Of course I see. But how do we do that, Song, eh?"
"The Marl Fox wasn't stupid. He smashed the other boats to pieces so no beast could follow him. 'Cause like I said, we're stranded." Song glanced hopefully at Dippler.
"No way we could knock up a boat from the bits of broken ones, Dip? You know about boat building."
The young shrew shook his head mournfully.
"All you can make of that lot now is a good fire. It'd take me days and days to make the roughest old boat, and that's always providing we could find the right log and drag it down to the waterside here. No, we're stranded, matey.
Song looked amazed at her disheartened friends. "Ha! Huh. So you give it all up, just like that?" "Well, not me. I can follow a riverbank whichever way it flows." She dashed off down the water's edge, shouting, "I'm not letting them get away from me. Oh, no!" After a moment, the young squirrel maid chanced a backward glance. There were Dan and Dippler running after her. "Wait for us, mate, wait for us!" Jeltor stood on the flatlands outside Redwall Abbey, out of range of arrows or missiles. Skipper jumped up onto the battlemented threshold top above the gatehouse and called out to the figure on the sun-shimmered plain.
"Well, what is it today, Snipe Nose? What are you after?"
Jeltor had to cup both paws around his mouth to be heard.
"Blood for blood! The one you call Jangler killed a marl fox. Give him to us, and after that we'll talk."
Skipper scratched his tail in amazement and winked at Jangler.
"Ho, ho! Hear that, matey? They want yer."
The warrior squirrel's heavily lidded eyes flickered but once. Grabbing the otter's javelin, Jangler leapt on the battlement top above Skipper and threw out a challenge to the marl fox.
"Are you the beast who wants to meet me? Stay right there, Patchbottom. I'll come down and sort it out with you, just me and you."
Jumping from the wall, he made for the wall stairs, only to be stopped by Brother Melilot.
"I know 'tis hard for a warrior to resist a challenge, Jangler, but only a fool rushes into an ambush. You would be slain as soon as you stepped outside our gates. Let Skipper do the talking."
Rusful Raguba patted Jangler's back.
"He's right, mate."
Skipper called out to Jeltor.
"Sorry, mate, you can't have old Jangler. We need him at Redwall to slay any more marl foxes who come calling. So what now?"
Jeltor pointed dramatically, letting his paw sweep the walls.
"So now you must all die, as a penalty for the death of a marl fox."
As Jeltor let his paw fall, there was a brief pause, followed by a loud whirring noise. Skipper flung himself down onto the parapet.
"Lay low, 'tis archers."
A flight of arrows, like angry wasps, buzzed viciously over from all points, most of their shafts thudding into the lawn inside the abbey walls. Jeltor waved his axe aloft.
"Now 'tis war. Your abbey is surrounded, and we will stay here for as long as it takes to slay you all or make you surrender."
Skipper reappeared on the wall, holding an arrow. The otter chieftain's face was a fearsome sight to see. He snapped the arrow contemptuously, tossing the pieces down onto the path.
"Hearken, fox! You want war? Then by the thunder you'll get it. Redwallers are peace-loving creatures, until they're attacked. Start digging your graves now, 'cause we ain't going to dig 'em for ye."
Bargle detailed his guasm back to their wallguard, then followed Skipper and the others down to the gatehouse. Rimrose and Elayo were waiting for them.
"Did they mention our daughter or her friends?"
Song's mother inquired anxiously. The lazy-lidded eyes smiled comfortingly at her.
"No, my pretty one, course they didn't. They don't even know Song and her pals are away from the abbey. Or they would have used him to try and draw us out. Ain't that right, Skip?"
"Correct, mate. Those young'uns have got the sense not to get themselves captured. They know what they're doing."
Rusful went out. Sitting on the wall steps, he buried his head into his paws. Elayo came and sat by him.
"No good fretting, Rusful or Raguba. You can't do nothing about your son now. We're stuck in here, for better or worse, surrounded."
The squirrel warrior wiped a paw across his eyes.
"'Twas me drove Dan to it. Do you think he'll ever forgive me for the things I said to him?"
Elayo took Rusful's paw and squeezed it.
"Course he will. Dan's a good young creature, like our Song. He ain't stubborn and unmoving like his father. But it takes all kinds, friend. And what we're going to need in the days that lie ahead are warriors, stubborn, unmoving warriors, like yourself."
For the first time since the Battle of the Southwest Corner, Rusful smiled. He stood up and bowed courteously to the old squirrel.
"I thank you for those kind words, Marm. When there's fighting to be done, and warriors need to stand firm, you'll find me the most stubborn and unmoving of all. 'Tis just the way I am."
Because of the danger from further volleys of arrows, Skipper requested that any beast not on wall guard stay inside the abbey. Florian decided that the time need not be wasted. If the Redwallers were to defend themselves from outside attack, they needed drill and weapon training. Knowing nothing whatsoever about either matter, the hare made it all up as he went along. Armed with a motley selection of ladles, window poles, brooms, and any domestic item that came to paw,
Elders and Dibbons were lined up in Great Hall, together with the Noonvale troop, and Florian swaggered about in what he imagined was true parade ground manner.
"Right ho, troops. Let's see if we can't knock you into shape, what? Form yourselves up in four ranks here. Jump to it now."
Brother Melilot and Diggum Sellermole were edging away when the hare challenged them.
"I say, you two chaps, where do you think you're jolly well off to? Back in line this very instant."
Melilot put down the feather duster he had been shouldering.
"Excuse us, but you'll have to let us go. That's if you want dinner tonight. We're on kitchen duty."
Florian waved them away hastily.
"Oh, right you are. Can't have starving troops, what, what?"
Sister Slowey and Gerbold grounded dustpan and window pole.
"Sorry, afraid we've got to tend to the wounded in the infirmary."
Florian blew a sigh of frustration.
"Off you pop, then, you two. Excuse drill. You there, Dwapple. I said form four blinkin' ranks, not five. Come up front here, sir, where I can keep my beady eye on you."
Saluting furiously, the mouse babe charged up front, dragging behind him a long-handled oven paddle, which cracked against footpaws and tripped all who came in contact with it, causing widespread chaos.
"Youch! Go easy with that paddle, you wretch!
Oof!
And you watch that ladle near him put me eye out!
Ack! Me footpaw! Get away, you villain!"
Florian grabbed the paddle and tried to wrestle it away from the mouse babe, who was quite proud of his weapon and not prepared to give it up without a struggle. As he fought for possession of the paddle, the hare kept shouting orders.
"Steady in the ranks there! Stand up straight, you chaps! Pick up those weapons! No squabbling at the back, that's an order! Where in the name of seasons are you three going, eh?"
"Her us'n's got to set e tables for victuals, sir."
"Oh, quite. Give me that paddle before you lay every beast low, you fiend."
"You let a paddle go, Mr. Florey. It mine."
"Mutiny, is it? I'll have you locked up in the vegetable cupboard."
"Mr. Florian, how can you shout so heartlessly at a tender babe after all he's been through?
Fie, and shame on you, sir." "Deez a marm, don't interfere, or you'll be locked up with the blighter. Stand fast there, you lot, I haven't told you to move.
Dormitory duty, beds won't make themselves, you know.
Dishwashing, Brother Melilot needs clean pots and pans. Ale and cordials to be brought up from the wine cellar. Candles and lamps need attending before evening."
Dropping their makeshift weapons, Redwallers scurried off, left, right, and center. Florian managed to drag the paddle from Dwapple, who threw himself on the floor, kicking all four paws and howling inconsolably at the loss of his beloved weapon.
"Wah-ha! Rotten old rabbit, pinch of Dwapple's paggle! Wah-ha-ha-ha!"
Deason picked him up, comforting Dwapple and castigating Florian in the same breath.
"There, there, now, my little soldier, did the cruel rabbit steal your paddle, nasty, wicked beast?"
"Madam, cruel, nasty, and jolly well wicked I may be, but I am a hare, ma'am, not a rabbit."
"Indeed, sir?
Well, you show all the sense of a rabbit, a two-day-old one. You are not fit to command that paddle you have stolen."
Florian sat down dispiritedly upon the floor-stones, staring about at the empty hall.
"Huh. Bloomin' paddle's about all I've got left to command, what?"
Evening shades were stealing over the western horizon, scarlet sun rays reflecting off the undersides of heavy dark clouds drifting eastward. Skipper ducked low as he led a party of Redwallers along the ramparts. Meeting Bargle, the otter beckoned at the group he was heading.
"Evening, mate. Brought the rest of your Gwossam and some Redwallers to relieve the sentries. What's happening out there?"
Bargle took a quick final glance over the parapet.
"Oh, nothing much. They're shooting off the odd arrow to keep our heads down. But apart from that, 'tis fairly quiet. What's for victuals?"
Skipper grinned at the tough little shrew, whose stomach was growling thunderously.
"Sorry I never sent any tucker out to you, but I couldn't chance no poor kitchen beast getting hit by an arrow. Don't worry, though, messmate. There's food aplenty for you and your shrews. Leek and celery soup, tater and mushroom turnover, sweet cider and plum duff."
Bargle grimaced longingly as he tightened his belt another notch to quiet his rumbling gut.
"Did I hear you mention plum duff, mate?"
Skipper winked.
"Aye, with sweet arrowroot sauce."
Bargle grabbed the otter's paw fiercely.
"Plum duff and sweet arrowroot sauce. Don't say another word, Skip, or my stomach'll perish before I make it to the table."
Each shrew who left the wall was replaced by a relief sentry,
Skipper did the rounds of the wall top, whispering words of advice and encouragement. He gave special attention to Friar Butty, who was positioned at the center of the north wall.
"Are you sure you can keep your eyes open all night, Friar? You won't drop off to sleep, will you, sir?"
The old squirrel patted his friend's sturdy paw.
"I'll be fine, Skip. You just leave me here. Funny, but I don't feel the least bit sleepy tonight. I couldn't face a night alone in the gatehouse without Nutwing. His snores always lulled me into a slumber. Ah, lackaday, I miss the feathery old rascal."
Skipper looked away and blinked.
"So do I, Friar. We all miss him."
He was distracted by Florian, waving from the battlements over the south wall gate. Skipper scurried across to the hare.
"Keep your ears down, Mr. Florian, sir, or they'll spot you."
The hare ducked and seated himself, gesturing over the wall.
"Something rather odd going on down there. Vermin chaps dashing back and forth, carrying bits and pieces and whatnot."
Skipper crouched alert.
"Bits and pieces of what, sir?"
"Oh, I don't know. Twigs, brush, wood, and what have you.
Must be out of their bally minds. They're dumping the stuff in front of the wall gate and scampering off. What'd they want to do that for?"
Florian looked around, but Skipper was gone, rushing along the ramparts and down the wall steps to the small wicker gate at the center of the south wall. Jangler and Russell were already there. The two warrior squirrels had been carrying out their usual patrol of the inner grounds. Skipper joined them, keeping his voice down to a whisper.
"What are those vermin up to, mates?"
Jangler watched the door through half-closed eyes as he replied. "Me and Russell were passing here when we smelled vegetable oil and pine resin. Then we heard those rats pushing dry brush and wood up against the door. You know what that means, Skip?"
The big otter nodded grimly.
"Fire. They're going to try and burn their way in here. Jangler, go to the wine cellars. Over the door there you'll see three great longbows and quivers of big cloth-yard shafts. Bring them here quick. Russell, get Gubbio Formole and some of his crew. Fetch buckets, too. Start filling them from the pond. We'll put a spoke in their wheel. If they want to play with fire, mates."
16. Night had fallen along the fast-flowing river. Dippler sat at the water's edge, bathing his footpaws. Dan trotted back and tweaked the shrew's ear lightly.
"Come on, Dip, you can't stop here."
The young blossom shrew let the cold water flow over his weary paws.
"Why not? They've got to rest too, you know. Don't suppose they could travel far on fast water like this at night. Too dangerous."
Song walked back to join them.
"He's right, Dan. Perhaps we'd better find some place where we can take a bite to eat and sleep till dawn."
They continued walking along the riverbank until they found a likely spot. Song was loosing her pack when Dan called to her.
"Song, come and look at this. What do you make of it?"
He was standing in the shallows, hanging on to the trailing branches of a willow and gazing downriver. Song waded in by him.
"See, further down the bank? Looks like firelight to me."
Song peered at the glow in the far darkness.
"Aye, 'tis fire, right enough. Dip said they've got to rest, too. Maybe it's them. Let's go and take a look. Best go armed."
Steering back from the bank a bit, they stole swiftly through the woodland, Dippler and Dan with drawn swords, and Song with her greenstone-topped club. Drawing near to the light, they could make out a warm glow, but no sign of the flames that made it. Careful now, they measured each pace, avoiding dead twigs, dry ferns, or anything that might make a noise and betray their presence to the enemy. Song gripped her weapon tightly, whispering to Dan,
"What do you think? Is it them?"
A huge, bushy, brown-furred, mouse-like creature popped up in front of them and began chattering in a shrill voice.
"Ah, yes, yes, it could be them, though to be sure 'tis not. Why, 'tis only ourselves, and we're not them, unless by them you mean us. And if 'tis ourselves you're after, then we're them, yes, yes."
The three friends were taken aback. Dan was first to recover. Menacing the creature with his sword, he backed it up to a tree, only to have Dippler jump in and place himself between them.
"Leave him alone, mate. 'Tis a water vole. They're friendly."
The shrew held both paws out and wiggled his nose in a strange greeting to the newcomer. Grinning cheerily, the water vole returned the salute and continued chattering.
"Oh, yes, yes. And you'll be one of the Gossam. Knew it as soon as I saw your spiky little head. Up and down this river your tribe used to go all the time. Oh, yes, yes. Don't see many Gossam these seasons, though. No, no. River's too fast for shrews, I think. Whew!
Aren't I the terrible one for Gavin, though? Yes, yes, you can spit in the river and not make much difference to it. That's what I always say. Yes, yes.
Dippler thrust his chin out aggressively at the water bowl. Who do you think you're talking to, Bushhead? No river's too fast for a Gwasom shrew. And we should know, 'cause we've sailed them all.
Still grinning, the bull rattled on. Ah, well, yes, yes, I see what you mean, so I do. And you're a fine figure of a shrew, so you are. And I take back any lie I uttered about your yes, yes, so I do. 'Cause an egg in a duck's belly is neither under nor over the water, and that's a fact, so it is, yes, yes.
All through his ceaseless babble, the water bull's eyes were fixed greedily on Song's greenstone stick. He was making her uncomfortable, so she quickly hid it behind her back.
Excuse me, but could I fit in a word sideways? I'm Song, this is Dan, and the shrew's Dippler. We're just looking for some place to eat and spend the night. We don't wish to stand here and be talked to death, if you'll forgive my saying so.
Springing forward, the water bowl began shaking Song's paw vigorously.
Oh, yes, yes, you're well forgiven, missy. I'm called Burble. Me mother had a sense of humor, you see, yes, yes. Food and rest, is that all you'll be needin'? Well, follow me. The riverheads can supply that. You can be sure as an onion's a sour apple with too many coats, yes, yes.
Song had great difficulty extricating her paw from Burble's ceaseless paw-shaking, but the moment she did, the bull shot off like an arrow. They had to follow him at a headlong run. Why they could only see the firelight's glow soon became clear. It emanated from a great cave hewn deep into the river bank, slightly above water level. Burble bowed to them as they stood panting outside.
Ah, yes, yes, 'tis only an old bit of a hole, but 'tis home to me, and has been to my father and his father before him, and his father before him, and his father before him, and his...
A big old gray-furred water bull had come out and clamped a paw over Burble's mouth. He nodded at the newcomers.
You know, sometimes us riverheads say that the river'll stop babbling before young Burble does. Do you all come in now, and welcome.
Inside the cave, there were upward of 12 or more water bulls, seated round an enormous fire, eating bowls of stew. The old one called to them.
Our Burble's brought some travelers for a bite of supper, so he has.
A fat, motherly-looking bull in a woven rush apron bobbed a curtsy.
Yes, yes, so he has. Sit ye down, and 1,000 welcomes to ye.
Song touched the green stick to her forehead in a salute.
And 1,000 thanks for your kindness, marm.
Suddenly all the water bowls threw themselves face down, paws outstretched. They set up a wailing din.
Ooh-ah! Gora-ma-hoogly! The leafwood! The leafwood!
Did I say something wrong?
Dan looked perplexed at the prostrate riverhead tribe.
I don't think so, Song. Wonder what a leafwood is.
Burble was only too willing to explain.
Do you not know what a leafwood is? Ah, 'tis a wonderful thing. Yes, yes, so 'tis. De leafwood is carried only by the highest chiefs and greatest vole warriors who live on the waters. Dippler, you're a water creature. Shame on you for not knowing of the marvelous leafwood. Why, myself has known of it since I was born, and my father and his father before him, and his father before him, and...
Burble caught the look in Song's eye as she raised her leafwood. He went silent with a meek grin, but only after having the last word.
And so on and so on.
The old gray water bull's voice trembled as he addressed Song.
Ah, a leafwood could surely make the Riverhead tribe famed and feared by all. We would give anything to be owning such a marvelous thing.
The young squirrel's reply was instant.
I would trade it for a good boat, sir.
The old one's face lit up with joy.
Now, isn't that a wonderful thing to be saying? For 'tis myself who owns the greatest boat ever to sail on water.
Dippler gave Song a warning glance, then stepped in to take charge of the trade himself.
Let's take a look at your boat first, sir.
No offense given, I hope. The gray bull's stomach wobbled as he chuckled.
Yes, yes, and none taken, I'm sure. For who better to look at a vessel than the Grand Gwasom himself? Follow me, young travelers.
Taking them out onto the bag, he passed a lantern to Dan.
Here now, great sword-bearer, hold on to that while I show him a boat.
Pulling aside clumps of bog willow and saxifrage, the oldster heaved forth a type of oblong coracle fashioned from osier boughs, covered with rowan bark and held together by layers of pine resin. He tapped a paw alongside his snout, winking slyly.
Never leave boats moored out on water for all beasts to see,
like the dreaded old Marl Fox and his water rats who passed here today. Oh, yes, yes, it pays to keep your boats hidden.
Song glanced down the fast night-dark river reaches.
So they passed here. Where do you think they went, sir?
The oldster scratched his chubby cheeks and shrugged.
Ha! They could have been sailing to the moon, for all I know, missy. Well, Gwasom, what do you think of a boat? A splendid craft, eh?
Dippler had been inspecting the vessel, and now he said,
Oh, it's not bad. Not good, but not bad. But seen too many seasons' service on this river for my liking, sir. Ah, here we are. This is the boat for us. My friend'll trade the Leafwood for this'un.
The young shrew dragged forth another vessel, far newer than the first, which shone like a honey globule from the many coats of pine resin that had been melted down and applied to its sleek sides. Unlike the other, this craft had a proper pointed bow and butted stern, and patterns and symbols had been painted beneath the resin with colored dyes, giving it the look of a very special boat. The old water vole shook his head and waved his paws furiously.
Ah, no, ah, no. You can't be having that one. Sure, and 'tis never the sort of boat you'd be going after mile foxes with. No, me bold Gwasom, I'm afraid I can't be letting you have that one.
Song twirled the Leafwood idly. Lantern light gleamed off the round, shiny green stone implanted at its end. She nodded to Dan and Dippler, and all three sauntered off, Dippler smiling back regretfully at the gray water pool.
Pity. We'll just have to trade the Leafwood with some other tribe.
The bull dodged in front of them, hopping back and forth to stop them wandering off.
Whoa, now, young buckos. I've got other boats, you know.
Yes, yes.
Good ones, too. Let me show you them.
Song shook her head. Feigning boredom, she wagged the Leafwood under the old bull's nose.
No, I'm sorry, sir. No other boat will do. That's the one for us. Same as this Leafwood is the thing you want. Here, hold it.
The bull took hold of the object reverently, covetousness shining in his eyes at the symbol of power. Song judged the moment right.
Now, do you want to give it back to me so that when we're gone you'll never see it again? You look to me like a skilled creature, well able to build a boat, probably far finer than that one.
What's it to be? The gray water bowl looked from the Leafwood to the boat, from the boat to the Leafwood, and repeated the performance.
Ah, singe me whiskers and sink me tail. 'Tis a bargain done.
He threw back soil in the air, stamped his footpaw down thrice, and spat on his outstretched right paw. Spitting on their paws, the three friends shook heartily with him. He grinned ruefully.
A true trade, though you do strike a terrible hard bargain, yes, yes. That's a Riverhead Bull Chief's boat you've got there. Light as a feather, true as an arrow, and faster than a brown trout. There's not a craft on any water that can keep up with it, let alone try to beat it. 'Tis sorry I am to part with yonder vessel.
Dan whacked him heartily on the back.
But now you own the Leafwood, sir. The power is all yours.
The bull did a little jig of delight.
Yes, yes, so I do. Every good trade calls for a camellia, so here goes.
He raised his head and called in a loud, piercing yell.
Camellia!
Startled, the three companions jumped back, as water bowls materialized from seemingly everywhere, all crying aloud,
Camellia!
Dippler took their haversacks and tossed them into the boat. Looks like we're invited to some kind of celebration, pals. Later, the big cave on the bank was packed tight with water bowls, nearly every one of them holding either a little fiddle or a small paw drum. Song and her friends sat by the fire, spooning down thick, delicious river stew, comprising cress, water shrimp, turnip, carrot, mushrooms, and several other vegetables and herbs that they could not identify. Bowls made sure that their beakers of honey and blackberry cordial were never empty. Soon every paw in the place was tapping to a lively jig, well played and heartily sung by the Riverhead tribe.
Oh, there's some fools take a bath each day by rolling in the morning dew, and others who won't wash at all, but that ain't me nor you. Others some take dry dust baths, and reckon that they're clean. But if a water bowl you be, well, you know what I mean. Ho, ho, yes, yes, ho, hoo. Don't sit and shiver beside the river. Dive right in with a splosh. Grab hold of a good old soapwort root, and give yourself a wash. Scrub hard, scrub soft, scrub lively, mate. Good health you'll never lack.
And if your paws can't reach around, a fish'll scrub your back.
Ho, ho, yes, yes, ho, hoo.
The ditty finished amid great merriment, with the old water bowl acting as master of ceremonies, pointing the leafwood at the three.
Come on now, travelers, sing for your supper.
Dan flushed with embarrassment.
Singing isn't a thing I do best. You have a go, song.
Dippler helped himself to another bowl of stew.
Ah, you're a good singer, missy. If they hear my voice, that old feller's liable to cancel the bargain.
Song stood up and called out to the musicians.
Do you know the one called Green Rushes and Lilies So Pale?
Several of the old vole wives threw their rush aprons up over their faces, calling out warnings to the pretty young squirrel.
Ah, sure, don't try it, missy. 'Tis too fast.
They'll leave your verses behind, pretty maid. Water voles play speedy.
Song took a sip of cordial to wet her lips.
Oh, they will they? Well, let's see him try. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Water bowl fiddles and drums started the music at a cracking pace, but Song was right up there with them, her sweet voice ringing out.
Green rushes, and lilies so pale, pray sit ye down, friend, now and list to my tale. For the rivers flow fast, and the mountains are tall, and across the wide moorlands the curlews do call, deary wallaker, willaker, doddle-rum day.
Green rushes, and lilies so pale, bring me bread and cheese and some dandelion ale, and light up a fire now to warm my cold paws. I'll sit here all winter till that river thaws. Skither riddle, I fiddle, I rumble tum hay. Green rushes, and lilies so pale, I've traveled so far over valley and dale, stale bread and hard cheese, and the ale isn't here, and the fire isn't lit, so 'tis goodbye, my dear. Rowdle, dowdle, rytoodle, I go on my way. Green rushes, pale lilies, I'll bid you good day, for where I'm not welcome, I never would stay. And to all you musicians, I'd just like to say, if I've sung out too fast, your indulgence I pray. Amid wild cheers and resounding whoops, Song was carried shoulder high around the cave. An old vole wife shook a ladle at the paw-sore panting musicians, some of whom had stowed their fiddles and drums away, having been left far behind by the final verse, with Song completing the last four lines unaccompanied. The vole wife cackled.
Ha-ha! You lot had better learn to play proper, yes, yes. The squirrel maid sang the paws off'n yer. Right sweet and clear, too.
Burble raised his beaker aloft.
Yes, yes, let's drink the health of the best bargainer and finest singer, the bravest-looking sword-bearer, and the starvinest gwasom ever to come inside Riverhead Cave. Good luck and fine fortune be theirs wherever they travel.
Yes, yes.
The water bowls raised their drinks and roared out,
yes, 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 yes.
Dippler licked the rim of his bowl.
Any more of that stew left, matey? No point in letting it go to waste.
Moken lay back in the stern of the logboat, trailing a paw in the water as he issued orders.
Ship those oars and let her drift, and pass some victuals back there.
Fennel, my friend, keep our boat out in the middle, away from the banks.
The shrew sobbed miserably as he maneuvered a paddle oar in the stern behind the Marlfox.
This noose is strangling me. I can hardly keep my eyes open, sir.
Stern-faced, Moken tested the double-headed axe blade on his paw.
You'd better keep your eyes open, shrew, or I'll shut them for good.
The logboat drifted on into the calm summer night. 17. A luminous white figure with black pits for eyes and a gaping blood-stained mouth drifted spectrally around the bedchamber of the High Queen Sylth. Its voice seemed to come from afar, like the spirit of one lost upon a dark and distant shore.
Sylth! I see you, I hear you. I will not rest until you are dead. Die, Sylth!
From within the curtained palanquin, which served her every purpose, Queen Sylth's voice screeched hoarse with terror.
Go away! Leave me in peace, white ghost! Guards! Guards!
Immediately the bedchamber door started to open, the figure vanished upward. Water rat guards bearing torches dashed into the already brightly lit room. Obediently, they searched every corner as the queen ratted on.
It was here again, the white ghost. Where's my daughter, Lantour? I want her here right now. Lantour! Lantour!
In the room directly overhead, the vixen Lantour hauled up a sheet through the wide floorboard joints. It was heavily flecked with fish scales to make it appear luminous, with black charcoal and red dye marking out the face.
Folding the sheet carefully, Lantour stowed it in a corner cupboard. The vixen replaced some loose boards in the cupboard's bottom, but before doing so, she directed a final spine-chilling moan into the bottom section, which connected with a similar cupboard in the queen's bedchamber below.
Ooh-hoo.
Closing the cupboard carefully, Lantour listened to the commotion set up by her mother as it echoed upward.
There it goes again. I told you, fools, the white ghost has been in this room. Not a moment back. Find it. Lantour! I want Lantour!
A moment later, the vixen strolled calmly into the queen's bedchamber. She dismissed the guards, who were only too glad to get out of Sylth's presence.
Now what is it, mother? Bad dreams again? Don't talk to me like that. How can I have dreams if I don't sleep? The white ghost was here again, just before you came in. If you say so, mother. I am queen here. You will address me as queen. It was here. I saw it through the gauze curtain. You don't believe me, do you? Oh, queen, if you say it was here, then it must have been. But where is it now? Why does no beast save yourself see this white ghost? I don't know. Do you? Perhaps, O queen, it is something from your memory. Some enemy you slew long seasons ago. A restless spirit coming back for vengeance upon its killer.
Lantour narrowly dodged a drinking chalice that was hurled out at her from between the curtains. Sylth's voice was shrill with rage.
Get out! Out! I won't have you talking to me like that.
The vixen bowed and turned to go. Sylth subdued her voice to a whine.
No, stay with me, daughter, stay. I fear being alone here. This room is far too ugly. It needs more light, more beautiful things in it.
Lantour bowed again and continued toward the door.
I will stay, Majesty. With me you need have no fear. Wait, while I dismiss those fools who are supposed to be guarding your door.
Lantour stepped outside and dismissed the guards. When they had gone, she tapped lightly on the far wall. A female water rat emerged from the shadows of the upper stairs. Lantour nodded at her.
Wilke, keep an ear to the floor of my room. When you hear me snore as if I'm asleep, then send down the white ghost and start moaning. When you hear the queen scream, pull it back up again.
The rat Wilke bowed to her mistress.
I know what to do, my lady.
Lantour re-entered the bedchamber and installed herself in a chair.
Rest, O queen. I am here to protect you.
Janglur and Rusvel stood in the battlement shadows, watching the moon-patched landscape of open field that skirted half the south wall. Each of the squirrel warriors gripped a massive yew longbow with a gray-feathered arrow on its string, half as long and heavy again as a normal shaft. Something moved near the woodland fringe.
Here they come, mate. Two of them,
Rusvel murmured.
Over by that high sycamore.
Jangler followed his friend's direction, sighting the enemy.
Aye, I've spotted them now. Water rat and a marl fox. See the little glow? They're carrying a piece of smoldering rope. Let them get closer afore we take a shot.
The vixen Vannon bent double, taking advantage of every bracken patch and groundswell. Beside her, the rat Jackal kept pace, blowing lightly on the glowing end of a tow rope to rid it of ash.
Don't blow too hard,
Vannon cautioned him. We'll burst into flame. Leave it now until we're at the wall gate. Dackle uncrouched slightly as they moved forward, raising his head a fraction to survey the wall top.
Looks fairly quiet up there, Marm. We'll warm things up a bit for them soon.
As soon as the long shaft struck Dackle between his eyes, Vannon was off, rolling to one side into a patch of fern.
Thunk!
Another arrow embedded itself in the spot where she had crouched a moment before. Flattening herself, she wriggled away through the ferns. Two more arrows followed, the last grazing her footpaw. Vannon sprang up then and ran for the trees in a zigzagging rush, tripping and falling flat by the sycamore as a cloth-yard shaft buzzed overhead like an angry wasp into the woodlands. Jeltor grabbed the vixen and dragged her to safety behind the tree.
We'll have to think of another way to burn that door down.
Vannon tried to regulate her panting breath.
What about using fire arrows?
Jeltor looked at her pityingly. Fire arrows? Did you see the length of those shafts the Redwallers are shooting? You need a great longbow to fire such a shaft.
We don't have anything like that. Our bows aren't powerful enough. We'd be well within their range long before we could loose off a shot.
The vixen settled her back against the sycamore, pouting sulkily.
Well, why don't you think of something, brother? You're supposed to be the one with all the good ideas.
With a wave, Jeltor summoned his rats from the underbrush. No need to look so smug, sister. As it happens, I do have an idea, a good one.
The otter Boracle made his way over to Skipper from the north wall.
Bargle says that they're raining stones and arrows heavy on the north side, Skip. He thinks they're planning some kind of move over that way, using their firepower to keep our heads down.
From his position by the south wall gate, Skipper called up to Jangler.
You hear that, mate? What do you think they're up to?
The warrior squirrel called back confidently.
Huh. That's the oldest trick in the book, Skip. They're trying to decoy us away from here so they can burn the wall gate. Boracle, tell Bargle to sit tight there and keep low.
Rusvo had spotted movement at the woodland edges. Notching a shaft to his bowstring, he murmured calmly to Janglor,
Here they come again, matey. Spread out this time. About 8 of them, I count. They're going to take some stopping this time.
Jangler called to the otter on the ground below.
Best make your move now, Skip, while they're still far enough away.
Skipper gave the nod to Gubbio Formole and his crew, half of whom were carrying pails of water.
You ready, Goob? Say e word, sir. Us'n's bees never readier, her eye.
Skipper unbolted the wall gate and swung it open.
Go!
Those moles, not carrying pails, scuttled outside and cleared the gateway of inflammable wood and brush, heaving it inside, while the rest doused the outside of the gate down with pails of water. Skipper stood out in front of them, his longbow bent with a big arrow resting on its taut string, protecting the moles from attack. Now vermin were about halfway across the open ground. Jangler watched them pause, spread wide in a half circle. Suddenly the night blossomed with orange flame, as the water rats sat burning tow to spear tops, bound with oily rags, and charged for the gate.
Front and center, Skip!
The otter heard Jangler's warning. Gritting his teeth, he strained the longbow to its limit, letting the middle rat run straight at him. So strong was Skipper's shot that the arrow passed clean through the charging rat, who fell forward upon the burning spear. When the door was clear of brush and soaked well with water, and all the moles were inside, Skipper jumped back in and slammed the bolts home. Jangler let his bow drop, unwrapping the sling from about his waist.
They're close enough for stones now, Russ. Don't need these longbows.
He had already dropped one rat before Russville could load his sling.
Come on, scum, my name's Raguba!
Another rat fell to Russville's whirling sling. The rest broke and ran back to the tree cover, all except one who carried on charging forward. Seconds before both the squirrel's sling stones laid him low, he threw his spear. It thudded, blazing into the wall gate door.
Pail of water on a rope, quick!
Russville yelled out. Skipper hurled the rope end up. Russville hauled the water pail to the battlements and then lowered it over the top until it struck the outstretched spear shaft, upsetting its contents over it. Rewarded by the hissing sound of extinguished flames, Russville winked at Jangler.
No sense taking chances, even if the door is soaked.
Jangler Swifteye retrieved his longbow and loosed off an arrow, quivering.
Ah, you're right there. Let's turn the tables on them and keep their heads down for the night.
Formole gathered pawfuls of the bracken and wood that had been intended to burn the gate.
Noise of ye vermits to gather kindlin for a kitchen oven, sir.
Jeltor stayed well back in the woodlands, issuing orders to a rat.
Tell Askrod and Predak to pull back from the north wall and meet me back here. Vannon, this is no time to be dozing. Liven yourself up. We've got to plan our next move.
The vixen grinned maliciously at her brother.
Oh, given up the idea of burning our way in, have we? What's the matter? Didn't your good idea work?
In the gray hour before dawn, Song came awake. All around her in the packed cave, water voles were snoring and snuffling in the hot, stuffy atmosphere. The squirrel maid shook Dan lightly. Startled awake, he instinctively touched his sword hilt to make sure it was still there. Song gestured for him to make his way outside, then prodded the sleeping Dippler. Rolling over, the Gwasom shrew muttered drowsily,
Any of that stew left, mate?
Song stifled his mouth with a paw, whispering in his ear,
Wake up, Dip. We're going if the boat's still there.
Luckily it was. Dippler grumbled as they carried it to the water's edge.
What's all the rush for? I liked it in there. That stew was nice.
Dan tugged the shrew's tail sharply.
Keep your voice down and stop thinking of just your stomach. Song's right. We'd best get going while the going's good. I don't trust that old gray water bowl. He'd like it fine if he could hang on to both the leafwood and his boat. Those bowls seemed friendly enough, but you never can tell.
Yes, yes, you could never tell, especially with a crafty old beast like the gray one.
They whirled around as Burble emerged from the willows, carrying a sack of food and two extra oars. Dan eyed him levelly.
Where do you think you're going?
Brushing past them, Burble slid the boat into the water and threw his gear aboard. He leapt in after it and held the vessel still by grabbing firm hold of overhead branches.
Going with you, Yis-Yis. Ain't living in some old hole on the riverbank till I got gray whiskers like the rest of them. Stir your stumps and get in here. We've got to get going quickish before the river eds wake up and find their swallow gone.
Dippler was about to debate the point when Song shoved him unceremoniously into the boat and thrust a paddle at him.
Don't argue, Dip. We haven't got time. Something tells me Burble's right. Let's get away from here. We can argue all you like as we paddle. I'll take this side with you, and Dan, you and Burble take the other side. Don't waste time. Dawn'll soon be up.
With the two oars already aboard, the friends had an oar each. They steered their vessel out into the fast-flowing center of the river, heading downstream. Wise in the ways of boats, Dippler praised their new craft immediately. Even with their limited knowledge, Song and Dan had to agree with him. The water bowl's boat was a traveler's dream. The Gwasim Shrew watched happily as the boat responded to their paddles.
Light as a feather she is, mates. This and don't sit in the water. She skims it like a bird.
So that's why you called her Swallow, eh?
Burble nodded vigorously, casting worried glances behind.
Yes, yes, Dip. Now, less of the tongue and more of the paddle.
Song peered suspiciously across at the young water bowl, even as she took his advice and paddled harder.
Burble, I've got a feeling you haven't told us all. The way you talk, any beast would think we stole the swallow.
Burble explained in part as the swallow shot along the river like a glittering arrow.
Ah, well, you see, Missy, that gray one is a real sly beast. The swallow don't belong to him. She belongs to the River Ed tribe. But they all think Gray One traded his old boat for your leafwood, and he never told them different. They'll come after us soon. Oh, yes, yes, sure as trout like mayflies. The River Ed'll want their swallow back.
Dan dug the paddle deep, his jaw tight with anger.
So we're sailing a stolen vessel. That old water bowl tricked us. He gets the leafwood, but if they catch up with us, we get nothing.
The prow dipped and rose beautifully, skirting a rocky outcrop poking from the river as they feathered their paddle blades.
Rotten old swindler,
Song burst out, expressing her dislike of the gray one. However, Burble was smiling fit to burst, now that he had judged there was some distance between themselves and the riverhead bulls.
Hee-hee-hee! Don't get your paws in an uproar, pals.
Gray One thinks that, 'cause he's old, it makes him smart. But I'm younger and smarter than him by a good stretch of river.
Yes, yes.
Song eyed Burble curiously.
How so?
The little fat creature shook with unconcealed glee.
'Cause I tricked him. When that old barrel belly wakes up, he'll find himself clutching a stew ladle in his paws, not a leafwood. Yes, yes, I pinched it back off him. Your leafwood is inside that sack of grub I fetched with me. Hee hee hee.
Song looked sternly at the water bowl.
That was very wrong, Burble. Gray One deceived the tribe, but we kept our part of the bargain. Now we've got double trouble.
Dawnlight had begun filtering over the river in a pale wash of cerise and gold when a cry rang out faintly from behind them, echoing down the tree-shaded banks.
Way-la-hoo!
Burble's chubby face blanched with fright.
River Eds! Paddle for your lives, pals!
But I thought this swallow could outrun anything on the river,
Dan called out as they wielded their paddles furiously. Burble blew spray from his face.
Maybe, but they got 8 rowers to a boat, and River Ed bulls know these waters a lot better than you do, Squirrel. They'll take every shortcut, fast current, and river dodge the gray one can think of. Look for a cutoff. We got to get off the mainstream.
Bending their backs, the four young creatures labored at their paddles, mouths wide open as they sucked in air, every muscle and sinew of their bodies throbbing with strain. Behind them, the cries of the riverhead bulls grew louder. They were getting closer, gaining on the swallow with their river skills and greater numbers. Shaking perspiration and river water from his eyes, Dan gestured with his chin.
nodding forward to a spot farther upriver on the south bank. "Looks like a side stream ahead up yonder," he gasped out. But the water vole did not seem to fancy the idea.
"No, no, not that un. 'Tis a dead end, I think, full of slime and gnats. 'Twould be stupid to go up there, Dan."
"Way-lay-hoo! Death to boat robbers!"
Song chanced a quick glance back up the river, her mind made up. "Head toward that side stream before they come round the bend and sight us. If 'tis a stupid idea to hide up a slimy dead end, then mayhap they won't look there.
Don't argue, just do it."
As they cut across the stream, Burble scattered some supplies from his sack, bread and clay dishes, into the water.
"They'll find those in the rapids downstream. Perhaps they'll think we was wrecked. Duck your heads and ship those paddles."
Weeds, tall rushes, and overhanging bush raked their backs as the Swallow glided into the cutoff. The water was dark, murky, and fetid. Gnats, mosquitoes, and all manner of winged pests shrouded the four fugitives. Dippler grabbed some bulrushes and held the boat still. Sloppy green water vegetation swirled briefly on the surface and then settled again, as if no boat had ever disturbed it. Song's heart was pounding like a trip hammer. She was sure it could be heard if any beast passed too close. Fighting to get their breathing under control, they flattened themselves in the well of the Swallow. Dippler slapped at a large flying beetle that was trying to settle on his face. Dan shot him a warning glance, and then they heard the Riverhead tribe. It sounded as if they had a dozen or more boats out in pursuit. Old Gray One was in the lead craft, directing them.
"Way-lay-hoo! Straight ahead, they can't outrun us much longer. Bend your backs, Riverheads. Keep to the middle current."
"Yes, yes, but we ain't sighted them yet. What if they've shot off up in sidewater, like that nor there?"
"Ah, don't talk daft, Bull. They've gotten a guasum shrew with them. That and know enough not to do anything so silly. Can't you see 'tis a dead end up there? Has been for many a long season. Maybe we'll overtake them at the rapids. Even guasum shrews ain't so crafty when it comes to rocks and rapids, eh?"
"Nah, you could be right there. Wait till I get some paws on him, and that little turn-fur burble. I'll beat his brains out with a leafwood afore I toss him into the rapids with his thieving friends. Yes, yes. Flamin' cheek of him, stealing our Swallow like that. Pirates, that's what they are, matey, river pirates. Well, mark me word, they'll suffer the same fate as any pirate would. Onward, Riverheads! Straight course ahead now!"
The shouts died away on the still air as the Riverhead tribe paddled downstream. Dan sat up and began slapping at the winged pests that assailed him.
"Gar off! Leave me alone, you rotten villains!"
A big insect flew right into Song's eye, so hard that it caused her to see colored stars. Dippler was tearing at his fur, moaning,
"We must have been mad coming in here to hide."
The boat rocked as Burble performed a little dance.
"Ouch, ouch! I'm being et alive! Back out onto the river!"
Song squinched her eye, rubbing hard with a sweaty paw.
"No, we can't go out there. 'Twouldn't be long before we'd be running right into the back of them. Let's go a bit farther up this creek. Maybe it won't be as bad farther along."
Swatting and slapping at the insect hordes, they dug paddles into the muddy creek bed and pulled the Swallow south up the vile-smelling inlet. At mid-morning they called a halt. Though there were still a few insects about, most of the myriad from the creek mouth had given up following the four friends. Shipping the paddles, they looked around. Fungus-bedecked and pulp-soft dead trees lay across the creek, preventing them from going any farther. The water was black and peaty, with odd bubbles rising here and there, leaving a foul odor hovering in the air. In the bank shallows on one side there was a riot of blue flowers, bitscabious, brooklime, butterwort, and skullcap, sprouting thick. Dippler moored the shallow midships to a slender sisal oak on the shaded side of the creek. Song and Burble unpacked apples, some scones, and a flagon of cold dandelion and burdock cordial that had been stowed deep in her haversack. Wearily, they hauled themselves onto the mossy bank and began eating, groaning as they stretched aching backs.
"Ooh, me paws'll never be the same again after gripping that paddle so tight, mates. I can hardly pick me beaker up."
Dippler winked at the water bowl.
"Leave it there, then, Burb, and I'll drink it for you."
Dan polished an apple on his tunic.
"Phew, that was a narrow escape earlier. Those Riverheads wouldn't have accepted any excuses. We'd be dead beasts now if they'd caught us."
Burble lifted the beaker in his cramped paws.
"Oh, yes, yes, that's true, pal. Old Gray One's missing both the swallow and his leafwood. There'll be no mercy in Natin's heart.
Song bathed her eye with a drop of the cool cordial.
No, I don't imagine there would be. Why did you do it, Verbal?
The water bowl made a derisory gesture with one paw.
Yeah, that old Grayon was far too big for his coat. River Ed's never had one leader, just a council. But he appointed himself Ed of the council, and now he calls himself chieftain. Tain't right. Gray One was always a cheat and a liar. Bullied his way in, he did. Miss Song, here's your leafwood. Take care of it.
The young squirrel caught the greenstone-topped stick Verbal tossed to her. She looked at it pensively.
All that trouble just for this. Strange, isn't it? Last night we were the best of friends with the Riverheads. This morning they're out for our blood. All because of a boat and a stick.
Dan made a pillow of his haversack and lay back.
Great seasons, but 'tis warm hereabouts, heavy-like. Ah, well, if we must wait here till the coast's clear, I'm going to get a bit of shut-eye. See if you can't keep your debating down to a dull roar, will you, mates?
Dippler tossed an apple core into the water.
Good idea, Dan, but don't snore. It keeps me awake.
Song flicked a drop of cordial at the young shrew.
Listen, who's talking? The champion snorer of Redwall.
Dippler opened one eye, murmuring sleepily.
Oh, spare me, missy. I'm only a dibbin compared to you at snoring.
Before another half hour had passed, all four were curled up on the mossy bank, deep in slumber and snoring gently. Raventail and his band of roving ferrets watched the four sleepers from their position behind the fallen trees across the inlet. Peering slit-eyed between a gap in the rotten trunks, Raventail slowly drew his scimitar, smiling wickedly at the scruffy rabble surrounding him.
Kyar, brethren, don't a doze looky peace-laden, a lion dear?
Cruel, cruel shame 'twould be to wake ye up, dem. They only be younger beasters. Cruel, cruel shame, me say.
One of the ferrets slid a long knife from a sling at his back.
No need ter wake ye up, dem. I make em sleep long forever.
Raventail's scimitar tip pricked the speaker's narrow neck.
You do dat only when Raventail say so. Kyar, I want a much, much fun with younger beasters, for they be death still.
18. Brother Melilot and Gubbio Formole had decided, war or no war, they were going to prepare the traditional Redwall Midsummer Feast. What else could fire their tired spirits? Their only problem was that Dwapple, Blinny, Wugger, and several other rascally dibbins saw no reason why they should not help with the preparations. Formole put the finishing touches to a great hazelnut and elderberry pudding he was creating, crimping the edges round the basin top with a fork. Brushing the pastry with a mixture of green sap milk and honey, the mole twitched his button nose with pride.
"Yer, look at he puddin', brother. Him be a foine-lookin' beast."
Melilot left off preparing his apple and strawberry crumble to admire the mole's delicious-looking pudding.
"It certainly is a beauty, friend. You'd best light the back oven to cook one that size. There's plenty of wood and charcoal in the burner. Just put a light to it."
Gubbio lit a taper off a candle, shuffled across to the oven, and poked the light under. Still the light went out. Grumbling to himself, the mole lit the taper from the candle again.
"Her, they ain't make any taperers like they am used to burn all."
When he poked the lighted taper beneath the oven a third time, Formole distinctly heard the puff of air, accompanied by a giggle. Throwing open the oven door, he confronted the dibbin seated inside.
"Good job I never lighted the oven, lest we'd be havin' baked dibbins for a party, hoor, hoor."
The mouse-babe Dwapple dismissed Formole with a wave of his paw.
"Go away, Moley. Usin's bees livin' in here now. Go away."
Brother Melilot came to his friend's aid, a big oven paddle in one paw.
"And what, pray, are you dibbins doing inside our oven?"
Dwapple wagged a small mixing spoon under the good brother's nose.
"We making a shrimberry pie. Don't disturb us. It very dissipled."
Without another word, Formole and Melilot exchanged glances. Between them, they pushed the big wooden loaf paddle beneath the busy dibbins and slid them out onto the floor, bowl, mixture, and all. Melilot's obedience.
"What's this? Dried water shrimp, black currants, hot root pepper, pears, and radishes? You can't make a pie with that lot."
The mole babe, Blinny, glared at him challengingly.
Who says us can't? We inventorers making et free skipper.
Formal advanced on them with a long baton loaf.
Ruffians, rascals, out, afore I make sea into a sandwich.
The Divins fled, hurling dire threats at both cooks. Rimrose and Elio passed them as they dashed from the kitchens. Rimrose shook her head, smiling as she watched the tiny figure scurry off.
I remember when my little song breeze was like them. What a pawful button was, I can tell you.
Brother Melilot bowed to them both.
Ladies, we can always use some extra help down here. Would you be willing to aid us with Redwall's Midsummer Feast?
Rimrose returned the bow with a pretty curtsy.
That's what we came for, brother. I was thinking of making a cheese and celery flan with sage and parsley trimming. My mother is very good at baking blueberry and almond turnovers. Oh, my goodness, what's all this mess?
Melilot threw up his paws in despair.
Those wretched babes were inventing a pie with it, for Skipper.
A slow smile crept across the face of Grandma Elio.
Maybe we'll finish the job and serve it up to that great lump of an otter. He's always putting ideas into the young'un's heads. 'Twill serve him right, if you ask me.
Out on the south wall, Skipper was scanning the woodlands, and company with Jangler and Russell.
Ha-har, 'tis too quiet, mates. I don't like it. They're up to something. I'd take me affidavit on that.
Jangler twirled his sling idly, the longbow resting at his side.
All's we can do is to keep our eyes peeled, Skip.
Ahoy, Mr. Florian. How are things over your side?
The Noonvale Hare was guarding the east wall center with Boracle, both of them crouching down behind the battlements. When he heard the squirrel hailing him, Florian beckoned the three comrades over with a silent wave. Curious to know what was going on, they hastened across.
Keep your heads down, you chaps, Florian whispered. We've hit on a super wheeze. See this long pole? My troop use it for their tightrope walking act. Now pay attention. As you see, me and the sturdy Boracle have tied this dagger to one end. Matter of fact, we've just finished sharpening the jolly old knife on the battlements. Feel that edge, and tell me what you think.
Skipper tested the blade, pulling his paw away and sucking it.
Whoa! That's what I call sharp, matey. What's the game?
With a nod, Florian indicated an unusually tall ash, growing not far from the wall. It was a huge, stately tree.
See that ash? No, don't gawp and stare like frogs at a fry-up. Merely take a peep at, quickly. Good. Now, what did you see?
A pipette, as Florian called it, was all that the sharp eyes of Jangler needed. The squirrel saw it right away.
There's a rope tied up there near the top.
The lanky hare chuckled.
Well done, that squirrel. Let me tell you, I've been watching that since mid-morning. Blinkin' Water Rat climbed up and tied the rope there.
Ha, ha, ha.
Confounded Oak was slipping and tripping. Took the blighter an absolute age to get the bally rope fastened in those top branches. Now they've let it off, back a few trees. Good job you chaps have got me on your side, what? I've twigged the whole blinkin' plan, of course. Didn't take long for a great mind like mine. Now, lay low and watch, like good chaps. Wait for the fun to start, what?
3 trees back, a rat named Stuckfur perched on the highest limb of an elm. Jeltor and Askrod stood gripping the heavier branches below him. Jeltor called up to the water rat in a loud whisper.
Is the top of the wall empty? No beast there?
Stuckfur raised himself on tip-paw. He had a good head for heights.
None that I can see, sire. Though there's one or two shrews over on the west wall, but they're facing the open ground in front.
The Marl Fox hissed impatiently.
I'm not concerned with the west wall, as long as the east wall is clear and empty. Can you see your way clear through to it?
Stuckfur leaned slightly to one side, balancing capably.
Aye, sire, I can do it from here. 'Tis a straight enough path.
Askrod did not like being so high off the ground. He clung tightly to the trunk.
Remember, hold the rope as far up as you can. Just swing out, and you should go in directly over the battlements. Don't worry if you can't make it first try. As long as it stays quiet, you can have a few more goes if you don't manage first time.
Extending his paws above his head, Stuckfur took a vice-like grip on the rope and drew in a deep breath, listening to Jeltor's final instructions for the risky plan.
When you land on the wall top, pull the rest of the rope over. It's plenty long enough.
Shin down it, open the wall gate bolts, then get clear and leave the rest to us. Do this right, and you'll be well rewarded, Stuckfur. I'll see to that personally. Right, take off. From where they crouched below the battlements, Jangler saw the rope go taut. He nudged Florian. Looks like the fun's about to start, mate. There came a swishing noise, like a wind through the forest, which increased in volume. Boracle was watching between the battlements.
Ho-ho, you was right, Florian. Here he comes, flying like a bird.
The hare stood up in clear view and leaned out from the wall top with his long, blade-topped pole at the ready. Stuckfur could do nothing to stop himself. Whipped by small twigs and spitting leaves, he watched in horror as Florian lashed out, the razor-sharp blade severing the rope at a single blow. Then the water rat really was flying free as a bird, not up, but down, though still traveling forward.
Yai!
The immovable sandstone blocks of the east wall cut short his flight. Boracle winced at the sound, but Florian's concern was not for the rat.
Huh. Hope that chap didn't damage the wall, what?
From all around the wall top, sentries came running to see what the disturbance was about. The Marlfox vixen Predak was waiting in the ditch near the west wall. The moment she saw the shrewd guards desert their posts, she made her move. Climbing stealthily from the ditch, she hurried to the base of the wall, unwinding a slim length of rope with a stone tied to one end. It took four throws before a satisfactory cast was made, but on the fourth try the stone soared upward and over the top of an ornamental spur jutting from the wall, just below the battlements near the northwest corner. Predak caught the stone as it fell. Now she held both ends of the rope in her paws, and she pulled each in turn, testing it. The rope ran free over the stone spur, backward and forward. Moreover, it could not be seen from the wall top, unless a sentry were to lean out too far for safety. Leaving the rope with both ends touching the ground, Predak stole away, back to the east side, where Jeltor and Askrod awaited her. The vixen radiated satisfaction as she made her report.
No beast saw me. The rope's in place, and all we have to do now is get the siege ladder nearby in the ditch, wait for nightfall, then haul it up to the wall.
How did the diversion go? Jeltor twirled the severed rope idly.
No, it worked well enough. But they were on to us, more or less, as I expected.
That hare slashed the rope with a device he'd thought up. Stuckfur never made it over the wall, but it provided the decoy we needed. Predak inspected the shorn rope end. Stuckfur was a good soldier. A fool, but obedient. Pity he's gone. Askrod interrupted her. Surprisingly enough, Stuckfur wasn't killed. He must have a head made of solid bone. Look, there he is. Stuckfur was wandering in a daze around the rats who were busy building the siege ladder. Both paws were still held high over his head, grasping a long piece of rope, which he stumbled over as he meandered willy-nilly. There was not a single tooth left in Stuckfur's mouth, and beneath the bulging lump on his brow, both eyes were black and blue. Bumbling about, the water rat muttered to himself,
"Must drop ober dwalsh, oben dwalgeich, must doot."
Bargel led his relief column of Gwasom shrews up onto the wall top, where Florian greeted him huffily.
"Well, hurrah, and hang out the jolly old flags. Relief at last, what? A chap could fade from the famine waiting up here. Have a good night's sleep, did you? No doubt you breakfasted well. Early lunch, too, by the look of you. Fiddledy-dee, sir. Tardy in the extreme."
Bargel baited the hare unmercifully, yawning, stretching, and patting his stomach.
"Slept like a mole and snored like an og, Mr. Florian. Woke to a wonderful breakfast. Honey, hot scones, fresh mint tea, and a little preserved fruit with metacream. Afraid there's none left. Very partial to metacream, us shrews are. Mind, though, we did ask the cooks to save you some crusts, didn't we, Mayon?"
Turning his face to hide a grin, Mayon agreed.
"Oh, yes. Why, I said to the cooks myself, I said, 'You be sure and save a crust or two for Mr. Florian and his gallant sentries, a-guarding those walls out there while the likes of us are sleeping safe in our beds and filling our stomachs.'"
Florian Dugglewolf Wolfenchop's ears stood erect with indignation.
"Cads, the lot of you, what? Small, spiky-furred grub-walloping bounders. Nothing worse than a grub-walloper. Come on, chaps, form up in a line and march off smartly.
We're not stopping in the company of grub-ollopers and tuck-scoffers.
As Florian led his sentries off down the wall stairs, Bargle called cheerily to him.
Grub-ollopers I don't mind, but tuck-scoffers is the worst kind of beasts. You be sure and hurry back now, sir.
Florian's whiskers bristled with outrage.
Unmitigated impudence, sir. Confounded brass-necked cheek.
Deesum popped her head around the kitchen serving hatch to warn the cooks.
Just thought I'd better tell you, Mr. Florian and the sentries are coming in from the wall tops. They look pretty hungry, too.
Brother Melilot clapped a paw to his forehead.
Oh, dear, so they should be. I completely forgot to send out their breakfast this morning. They haven't eaten since last night.
Grandma Alayo rescued her turnovers from the window ledge on which they were cooling, whisking them out of sight into a cupboard.
Gracious me, if that ten-bellied hare is hungry, we'd best hide everything, or he'll eat us out of house and home, and there'll be no feast at all.
Rimrose counted her cheese and celery flans.
Florian must have already been here. There's one missing.
Formal removed his hazelnut and elderberry pudding carefully from the oven, shaking his head at Rimrose.
Bain't no Florian tuck that in, marm.
He dibbins beat him to it.
Rimrose busily stowed the flans away, chuckling.
Ah, well, who could begrudge those little rogues a bite to eat? Hope they didn't burn their mouths, though. These flans are still hot. Oh, Brother Melilot, is that shrimp berry pie the Dibbins put together for Skipper ready?
Melilot pulled the pie from an oven.
Done to a turn, marm. Then why don't we serve it to Florian instead?
Melilot grinned at the thought of Florian tackling the highly unusual pie.
Why not, indeed?
Askrod sat in the woodland glade the Marlfoxes were using as a siege camp, watching the water rats testing the ladder. It seemed sturdy enough for the purpose. Furrowing his brow, he tapped his paws distractedly on a nearby oak. Vannon slid into camp like a wisp of smoke and seated herself next to her brother, observing his mood.
You seem out of sorts today. What is it?
Ah, we're getting nowhere with this siege. We'll never get the best of those red wallers. The luck's on their side every time.
So what do you propose we do, brother?
Cut our losses and get out of here, back to the island.
I only wish we could.
What do you mean, sister? What's to stop us going?
Listen, and I'll tell you, Askrod. While you lot have been playing with ropes and foolish ideas, I took a trip back to see what was happening at our camp, out by the river. Bilu was watching Moken for me, and I wanted to hear his report. But guess what?
What?
There's not a trace of any beast. The camp was deserted. Moken and the rats we left with him, all gone.
Gone? What about the tapestry we stole from the abbey?
Humph. Of course, that's gone also.
6 shrew logboats we had. 5 of them are smashed to pieces on the bank there. That means Moken took the 6th boat, the rat guards, and our tapestry with him, bound for the island, I'll wager.
The traitor!
I'd like to skin the deserter's hide from his back with my axe.
Aye, me too, brother. But it looks like we're stuck here for now. We can't go back empty-pawed.
So what do you suggest we do, Vannon?
Only one thing to do. We put all our cunning into defeating Redwall. Once the abbey and its treasures are ours, we can force the shrews to build us new boats. We'll fill them with treasure, and then play the waiting game. Then one fine day we'll start back for the island, when Brother Moken's least expecting us. And then there'll be a reckoning, I promise.
19. Martin the warrior strode through Danflor's dream. He pricked the young squirrel's footpaw with his sword tip, uttering only one word.
Awake!
Danflor woke and sat up. The sword he had been holding loosely in his sleep had slipped free and nicked his footpaw. The first thing he saw was a big scraggy ferret with a raven's feather braided to his tail, brandishing a scimitar, as he and a band of about 20 other ferrets crept up on their 4 friends. Dan shouted a warning to his companions.
Look out! Ambush!
Dan had never been so frightened in his life. The ferrets had them outnumbered by 5 to 1. Moreover, they were a savage, murderous-looking bunch, yellow-fanged, heavily armed, and red-eyed with bloodlust. He heard Song yelling,
Run for it!
Dan plunged off into the trees, pounding along as fast as his paws would go. He briefly saw the others begin to run. Song was fleet of paw. She ducked 2 of the vermin and fled into the thickets.
but Dippler and Burble were not so lucky. Still sleepy-eyed, they were cut off and brought down by a group of the fastest ferret runners. Sobbing with fear, Dan ran as he had never run before, dodging around trees, dashing through nettle beds, stumbling and tripping through roots hidden beneath deep, damp loam. Behind him, he could hear the wild, barbarous screeches of the ferrets, and their swords slashing at the undergrowth as they came after him. Chest burning, heart pounding, breath torn from him, and ragged gasps, Dan blundered onward, still clutching the sword of Martin. They were getting closer, shouting now. "Round around Tharaway! We's gorum now soon! Kyar!" Desperately, Dan looked about as he ran. Then he saw it, a four-topped oak with thick limbs and an impenetrable profusion of leaves. Dan shinnied up it, scraping his paws and barking his shins. Thrusting the sword between his teeth, he swung up through the thick boughs and stowed himself amid a clump of leafy twigs. Moments later, his pursuers grouped below the oak, brandishing an ugly array of bladed weapons. They slashed at the bushes, hunting this way and that. "Where does Squirrel go to? You beseed him? Caraba! Two de squirrels gar away. Quicky quick, those squirrelers. Gar a voler and a shrew beast. Kyar, goodyer." Scarcely daring to breathe, Dan lay flat on a limb, surrounded by oak foliage. He watched the jabbering ferrets arguing and thrashing at fern and bush alike with their curved scimitars. When they had searched around a while, one of them bared his stained fangs and pointed in the direction of the creek bank. "We go back now, back now. Lots of fun, Voler, shrew beast. Rabagak!" Screeching and whooping excitedly, they dashed off. Half sliding, half scrambling, Dan came down from the oak onto the ground. Burying the sword deep in the soft earth, the young squirrel sank into a crouch, lowering his head into both paws, and letting hot tears of shame flood down his face. Coward! His father had been right. He had run like a frightened Dibbon, leaving his friends to the enemy. It was the sound of his fitful sobbing that led Song to find Dan. Rounding the trunk of the massive oak, she sat down beside him. "Dan, are you hurt? What's the matter?" Still weeping, he shook his head. "I was frightened, Song, so frightened." Song angled her head so that she was looking upward into Dan's face. "Goodness, so was I. I nearly jumped out of my skin." Dan thrust the sword point deeper into the soil. "You don't understand. I proved my father right. He called me a coward, and I am. I deserted Dippler and Burble, left him to be captured by those ferrets. I was terrified, and I ran." Song gave him a hearty shove and sent him sprawling. "Oh, I never. I stayed and got killed, defending him." Dan shook tears from his eyes angrily. "Oh, stop talking stupid." The pretty squirrel maid smiled and clasped her friend's paw. "I will if you will, Dan. We did the only thing we could do. We escaped. Imagine if we'd stayed and got gallantly slain. Now that would have been a great help to Dip and Burb, wouldn't it?" Dan wiped his eyes with the back of a paw and sniffed. "Didn't take much bravery to run away, though, did it?" Song was beginning to lose her temper. She emphasized her words by prodding Dan in the chest with her leafwood stick. "No, it just took a bit of common sense, mate. We're still alive, you see? And now we're going back there to be brave when we rescue our two friends from those dirty vermin. Come on, Raguba. There's other things to do with that warrior's sword than stab the earth." Dan stood up then and pulled his sword from the ground. He wiped it clean on his tunic front, gritting his teeth. "I'm glad I've got you for a friend, Song, Swift Eye. Let's go and deal with some vermin." Dippler and Burble were hanging upside down by their footpaws from a thick willow bough, swathed practically from neck to tail in vine ropes. Raventail stood in the swallow, flicking his scimitar in front of their faces. "Well, well, little friends, you likin' to drink more?" At his signal, four grinning ferrets leaned down on the bough, causing it to bend so that Dippler and Burble's heads were forced down under the water, which amused the ferrets greatly. "Give 'em lots of drink for longer time. Kyar, volers and shrew beasts bees much thirsty now." After a while, they released the branch, and the two captives' heads came clear of the murky water. Both were coughing and gagging. Raventail flicked the scimitar closer to their faces. "Tell me now when you beasts got enough drink. Then Raventail cut you loose. From you necks, from you necks." Verbal spat out creek mud and wrinkled his nose at Dippler. "Don't give us much choice, do we, mate?" One of the ferrets by the bow suddenly sighed and flopped down for no apparent reason. Raventail cocked his head quizzically. "What mara we're a dattin'?" Before he could inquire further, another ferret went down. This time the thud of the slingstone was loud and obvious.
"Redwall! Raguba!"
Even as the piercing war cries rang out from the cover of the trees, another two ferrets were laid flat by paw-sized river pebbles. Slingstones began thwacking in, hard and heavy, and the undisciplined remnants of the ragged ferret horde fled. Scrabbling and biting at one another, they clambered over the fallen trees that blocked the inlet and dashed off into the thick forest. Raventail stood swaying in the friend's boat, waving his scimitar and yelling at them.
"Kai-ar! Get your back ear, Raventail, nor afraid!"
Then Dan came thundering across the bank, swinging his sword and bellowing like a badger in full blood wrath.
"Raguba!"
There was no stopping the young squirrel. Like a bolt of lightning, he flung himself on Raventail. The force of the impact was so great that both Dan and the ferret lost their swords and crashed into the water. End of Side 4. Change Side Selector Switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.